Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chopper out to Dansby. Dansby throws to first base. Is this happening? It is! The Atlanta Braves are world champions!
Welcome to the Chatting Average Podcast.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
Let me talk to you.
Hey, there we go.
Don't look now, but the Pirates are going to the bottom of the ninth, tied with the Astros.
Oh my God.
If the Pirates walk off the Astros,
I need it.
Raise the Jolly Roger
with O'Neill Cruz out. I need them to keep winning games.
No kidding. And how about Baltimore, man?
Just okay. No, we're not getting into Baltimore without being on the air.
All right. Okay. Fine.
Welcome to your friendly neighborhood Atlanta. Welcome to your friendly neighborhood Atlanta Braves podcast. Welcome to Chatting Average. I'm your host, Alex, joined as always by Mr. Cam Matthews. Cam, how's it going today?
What's shaking, bacon?
Oh, not too much. We're getting back on track. We're getting the hang of things. We're on our new network now. So sorry we missed you guys for the last week or two. But we're here to get caught up. You should have already heard an episode that was from last week, and here we are for this week.
Ready to Unless you listen to them out of order, and then in which case, things will sound really weird.
Which is probably par for the course now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, Cam, what's been up this week?
Oh, you know, just same old living the dream, Alex. Not a whole lot. When you have two kids, you know, you don't have a lot of extra going on. It's pretty much Easter stuff, baseball, work in the garden.
Oh, yeah, Easter. Didn't you have to get up at some ungodly hour on Easter Sunday?
Yes. Easter, I was up at 4 a.m. that morning to go help cook breakfast at my church for sunrise service.
And if I'm not mistaken, you were on the hook due to some 100-plus-year-old family tradition of cooking this breakfast.
Okay, not that old, but yes, my family's been cooking Easter breakfast for our church since, like, the 50s, I believe. So, yeah.
It's way too close to 100 years.
Well, to be fair, my family's been going to the same church for over roughly 150 years. So,
wow.
So there's that.
That's wild.
Yeah. So, yeah, going to the same church for over 150 years, that's a pretty good streak. But speaking of streaks.
Ooh, segues.
These Tampa Bay Rays. What is this?
They're the best team money can't buy.
So they've won 10. All right, so it is Tuesday night, April 11th.
And Ryan Reynolds is still not an Atlanta Brave.
Okay, we're not doing that right now.
Oh,
okay. And the Rays have won 10 in a row, correct? They've won 10 in a row coming into tonight. And they are currently leading Boston 7-1 in the bottom of the eighth. So they are about to win their 11th game in a row to open up the season. They are going to start out 11-0.
And guys, I crunched the numbers. That puts them on pace for 162 wins this season. Really wild stuff.
Oh, it's huge. It's true. And, you know, and I see a lot of people making the point of like, oh, well, they're not playing anybody. But it's also like winning 11 games in a row is hard no matter who you're playing.
Exactly. And that was our whole point last year when we won 14 straight. Like, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You're winning the games.
Yeah, because, you know, the goal being of, let's say, taking 2 out of 3 of every series. Well, that means you still lose one right in there. And so when you put up 11, 12, 13, 14 wins in a row, you take out that factor of losing a game in a series despite winning the series.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thoroughly impressed. I would not have, you know, and there's still a long way to go. I think I made the point. It was yesterday, I think, on Twitter. Friend of the show, Doc Herbert, had said that, you know, we're treating this baseball season after the Padres series kind of like football. But I replied to Doc, and I made the point that if this was the NFL at this point or at 10 games in, you are currently kicking off in week 2. that's the point you're at. You are literally kicking off the second game of the season.
Exactly, and that's what a lot of fans have a hard time kind of compartmentalizing that.
Right, and I get it. I get it, right? Like, it's easy, especially when you watch night in, night out, it is real easy to get caught up in, you know, the spectacle of, oh no, we've lost X games in a row, not thinking about the fact that you've still got 152 of these bad boys to grind through. Like, it's going to be fine. It's fine. And, well, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but we're talking about winning streaks and whatnot.
And while we're talking about it, I pulled up the Rays schedule to see what lies ahead of them as they kind of see how far this thing can go. So they're smack in the middle of a 4-game set with Boston. And like we talked about, Boston is hot garbage. So would not be surprised to see them sweep that and extend their streak to 13. But then they visit Toronto. And I have to imagine that they're going to drop one of those games to Toronto. After that, they've got Cincinnati and then the White Sox, and then they've got the Houston Astros. So I think if they can sweep the series in Toronto, then the sky is the limit. They're going to win 162 games. I don't care.
Can you just imagine?
They just lose.
Imagine if that's, you know, we're at 11-0 now, or about to be. Imagine if it breaches 16-0.
And you know what would happen, Cam?
What's that?
They would lose 3-0 in the division series to a team that was barely over 500.
Yeah, because that's just how
that's baseball, cool, baby.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, I've brought up the point before of like, think about the 2001 Mariners. Have set the regular season record for wins and then get
just the worst banner in sports, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a bad one.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Oh, Cam, well, I remembered something that I needed to ask you about because we alluded to it in our cold open. And, you know, before we get into it, I have to, I think, take a moment to explain to anybody who might be listening to us that isn't on Twitter what Braves fans do every year. So basically, as a method to annoy the other team and the other team's fans, when the Braves win, Braves fans will go and spam the other team's post declaring the final score. So there was one year it was Tiger Woods, and everyone would Photoshop him in a Braves hat and all this other stuff. Another year it became a moose. It's always something weird, and it's very unique to Braves Twitter, it seems. Which leads us to this week. Cam, if I'm not mistaken, your daughter came home from school with a little toy, right?
Yeah, so they had an Easter egg hunt at her preschool, and one of the eggs that she brought home, the Pirates just walked it off, clear the deck, cannonball, come in!
Woo, let's go!
Raise the Jolly Roger!
Raise it! I need the Pirates to absolutely dominate just without O'Neill Cruz. I would love nothing more. And good Lord, you got to be concerned if you're an Astros fan right now.
Yeah, the Astros just gave up a 3-run homer in the bottom of the ninth to Pittsburgh to lose.
Yikes.
Fun stuff. Anyway, yes. So back to the story at hand. Daughter comes home with her Easter basket from school. We're going through her eggs and everything, looking at, you know, the candy that she got. And we open up one, and inside is this little miniature plastic feathered baby chick, right?
Yeah.
And it caught me off guard when I saw it. And I laughed. It was kind of one of those things that, like, it's so goofy looking. I laughed. And so, like I do, I took a picture of it and shared it to Twitter, explaining how I was just losing my mind over this baby chick that my daughter had brought.
It was hilarious. This little bird had the dumbest expression on its face. So, of course, in true internet fashion, me and everybody else took it and started making Photoshop images with this little bird. And
we gave it the name Burb.
Burb.
Burb. B-I-R-B, burp.
And these things tend to catch on quickly when they do catch on. And within a matter of hours, the Braves were posting burb references. And the next day, we actually got a picture of a kid in South Carolina playing baseball with a sticker of the burb on his batting helmet. This is less than 24 hours later.
Yeah, so this thing just took off, you know, and it's just a fun, dumb little thing that I tweeted out that just, you know, took off and got a life of its own. And, it, you know, Burbomania was running wild on Friday. And then we lose a couple of games in a row, and I wake up Easter morning with over 20 different mentions.
You've essentially got death threats filling your notifications for this burb.
Essentially being blamed for the Braves losing streak because of burb.
And it like, you know, there were a lot of people that kind of had fun with it and were cracking jokes. There were some people who were very, very seriously blaming this for the Braves' losses.
Yeah, like the folks that, you know, made good memes out of losing because of burb and, like, you know, had videos of funny things happening to burb. Like,
Padres correspondent Sam Neer made some brilliant ones.
He had burb getting destroyed by Randy Johnson fastball. Like, stuff like that is funny. But, like, when I have people who I don't even know, who don't even follow me, literally in my mentions talking about, I'm blaming you for the Braves losing, it's like, all right, that's very weird behavior. You should go, as friend of the show Meg said, go outside and touch one grass, please.
One grass, just one.
Touch one grass.
So anyway, saying all that to say that right now you can go to teespring.com/store/chattingaveragepodcast and buy some burb merch.
That's right.
Because it went in style and out of style before we could even record a damn episode.
Yeah, crazy stuff. We did sell a few, so thank you to those who jumped on the Burb bandwagon.
We appreciate you for purchasing Burb merchandise, even though you may get shamed in public at this point for it.
But also Lost in the Shuffle, released on that very same night, was our Air Acuna t-shirt, which is a very fun design that I'm very proud of, and you should go check that one out as well.
Cam did really well with that one, you guys. It's got the colors of the Venezuelan flag in it. It's really cool.
Yeah So
see, I noticed things like that, Cam.
Yeah, see, I'm you know, there's a reason that my degree is in graphic design. I know when and where to use certain things. And where, Alex, can these people, these fine listeners, purchase our merchandise?
Once again, that is teespring.com/stores/chattingaveragepodcast.
There it is. And if there is a player that you want some kind of t-shirt modeled after, just let us know, because I'll probably do it if I got time.
Right. It really doesn't matter how obscure.
Like, it costcosts us nothing to put a new design up on Teespring. We'll throw just about anything up there.
We could be talking like low A ball utility guy. You want a t-shirt, we'll make it happen.
That's right. Just working me like a donkey. Anyway.
All right, Cam. So before we get into our, this week in baseball and our breakdown and all of that, I wanted to play a little game with you today.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So one of the more fun things about baseball, in my opinion, is how it kind of has its own lingo. Where, taken out of the context of baseball, make very little sense to the normal person.
Right.
So I'll start with some easy examples of this, Cam. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the definition, and you've got to give me the baseball term that I'm talking about.
Okay.
All right. So a couple easy ones to get started. A team's number one starting pitcher.
Ace.
Easy.
Okay.
A play in which the base runner hits the bag a split second before or after the ball arrives.
Bang, bang.
A bang, bang play. All right. A pitch that is high and inside.
High and tight.
We're going chin music on that one, brother.
Chin music. Okay. All right. Shawn Michaels, I hear you.
All right. As in theater, when a player's performance causes such excitement from the audience that he returns from the dugout to tip his cap or wave.
Daggone it. Okay, it's been a long day. Encore? No. No, that's not right.
I really wish
curtain
I had...
call?
There you go.
Yes.
I wish I had video of everyone listening to that screaming curtain call in their car. All right. When you've got two or three players on base.
Ducks on the pond?
Ducks on the pond. All right. How about when a baseball player strikes out four times in a single game?
Four times, that is a platinum sombrero.
That is a golden sombrero.
Golden sombrero, that's right. Okay.
Platinum sombrero, I don't think that ever actually existed, but Doc and Dylan decided that it was going to be a thing.
Well, I mean, it's enough of a thing that when somebody did it, they always got tagged in the tweets about it.
True. All right. Let's see. A routine fly ball.
Can of corn.
All right. How about when a pitcher throws the ball over the edge of the plate?
On the black.
Yep. All right. Now, these last couple were some that a few of them I hadn't actually ever heard. And were kind of interesting. So this first one, when a batter squares around to bunt, only to pull the bat back and make a short downward swing.
Ooh. I honestly don't know.
He butcher boyed him.
Butcher boyed him. Okay. That's interesting. I don't think I've heard that.
I hadn't heard that one either. All right. How about a hit that takes a high bounce off of or near home plate, allowing the runner to take first base?
A chopper?
The Baltimore chop.
The Baltimore chop. Okay. There has to be some history behind that.
So the Baltimore chop, as you may have guessed, came from the Orioles, specifically the Orioles of the late 19th century. With runs hard to come by in the dead ball era, the Orioles hatched a plan. They instructed their groundskeeper to pack the dirt in front of home plate. Legend has it he even put down a concrete slab so that speedsters like John McGraw and Willie Keeler could leg out infield singles.
Huh. That is super interesting.
The Baltimore chop. Now you know. Here's another unique one. It's when a bloop falls between the infielder and outfielder.
Like a dying quail or something like that?
That's called a Texas leaguer.
A Texas leaguer, okay.
Yes, the Texas leaguer dates back to 1901 when a rookie named Ollie Pickering made his debut for the Cleveland Blues. Pickering had become a legend as a minor leaguer in the Texas League, and he was immediately placed atop Cleveland's lineup when he was called up, and even holds the honor of taking the first at-bat in the history of the American League. He proceeded to have one of the most fortunate starts to his career imaginable. His first seven plate appearances all resulted in bloop singles. His teammates, amazed and somewhat irritated, decided to name the play after him, and it's stuck ever since.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, and this one is my personal favorite. Cam, what do you call a soft line drive that lands in for a base hit?
Blooper?
Oh, no, that'd be a duck snort.
A duck snort. Okay.
That'd be a duck snort. See, initially the phrase was duck fart.
Duck fart.
And yeah, that was the widely used phrase. And it kind of makes sense because, you know, thanks to the feathers, the flatulence of a duck would be pretty soft and muffled.
Right.
Much like
right.
a bloop single.
Okay.
Unfortunately, broadcasters were not allowed to say duck fart on television. So White Sox broadcaster Hawk Harrelson came up with a compromise. And during a Carlton Fisk at bat in the 1980s, Hawk said he'd like to see him hit a little duck snort to right.
That does sound like something Hawk Harrelson would have said.
So, yeah, I thought that was some fun. And gave me an excuse to say both duck snort and duck fart.
I like that. I like that a lot. I'm going to have to figure out a way to put some of those into one of my upcoming broadcasts.
Yeah. All right.
Well, Alex, actually, before we go to the next segment, I do have something fun to say with you. To tell you.
Oh, what do you got?
And keep this going starting next week. I do have a book that I recently got. My dad bought me an Atlanta Braves trivia book. So,
okay,
I may have to throw some questions your way next week.
Oh, God. They can't. If they're as easy as the ones in the MLB app, then I'm in good shape. But I have a feeling you're going to pick out ones that I am definitely not going to get.
Oh, yeah, this is like a 90-page book. I mean,
or ones that I absolutely should get, but for some reason won't remember.
Oh, yeah, some of these go deep. It'll be fun, though. So look forward to that. Hey, maybe I'll start throwing out some of those on the Twitter machine.
Too, yeah.
And you guys can have fun with that.
Have Trivia Tuesdays.
There we go. Starting next week, because it's already Tuesday.
Right. All right, Kim. Well, what do you say we get into some cool moments from this week in baseball history?
Let's do it.
Do we still have the lead? Last I saw, it was 5-4.
It is 6-4.
6-4, that's even better.
6-4, two outs, Jesse Chavez on the mound.
Oh, it couldn't be better.
Runner on first, but he's got an 0-2 count at the plate. And I fucking love Jesse Chavez.
He's so good.
He just goes out and throws strikes.
Like, he's 90 years old. He goes out there and just throws 93-mile-an-hour strikes.
Like, and it's so funny, like, to hear, because I don't remember him, really, in his earlier career.
Me either.
He
was one of those guys I always knew of.
Yeah.
But like, I couldn't tell you what kind of pitches he threw or.
Well, they always talk about like when he first came into the league, he was like a real fireball thrower, like high 90s, approaching 100, that sort of thing. And like, he's just the quintessential. Do you have like an uncle or anybody like older than you that you've played golf with?
Yes.
That you can tell back in the day, they probably just cranked a golf ball, but now they just have a nice, easy swing that gets the job done just as well, that they've learned through experience. Like, that's what Jesse Chavez feels like to me.
Right. Yeah.
He's like, I don't have to throw 100.
Work smarter, not harder.
That's right. I can throw 93 pump strikes and get outs. You know?
Oh, I'm definitely sneaking this in between one of the static clips.
There you go.
Love good Jesse conversation.
All right. We are going to jump into This Week in Baseball History. As always, you can find these facts at nationalpastime.com. And the week we're going to be looking at is April 10th through the 16th. Our first fact comes to us from April 10th, 2003. Astros outfielder Craig Biggio breaks Bobby Bonds' National League record when he hits his 31st career leadoff homer, a shot off of Cincinnati's Danny Graves in Houston's 4-2 victory at Minute Maid Park. Ricky Henderson holds the major league mark, homering 80 times as the first batter for his team. And just to bring it up, he broke the record of 31 in the National League, but the record in the National League still held by Craig Biggio is 53.
Huh.
And how many does Ronald have now?
I think he's pushing 30.
Yeah, so Ronald's over halfway there.
Which is insane. He should not have that many yet.
Yeah. Ricky Henderson has 81, the all-time record. So, yeah. Yeah, anyway, just throwing that out there. Yeah, who would have thought? Like, if I had asked you, okay, who has the National League leadoff home run record, would Craig Biggio have been the one that you would have thought of?
I wouldn't have thought of him, but it makes sense. I'm not saying he's a bad pick.
No, you know, the killer bees and whatnot.
Yeah.
Those dang Astros broke my heart, dude.
Yeah.
Oh my God. They hurt me so bad. I think
I'm so glad we were able to get a World Series off of them.
What was that? 03 or 04? It was 04, right?
When what happened?
That divisional series against the Astros. Where we gave up the tank and lost the series.
I'll say 03.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like that was the first time I really remember like sports hurting me as a 9 or 10 year old.
Oh no. Mine was the year was 1994.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina had just won the national championship the year before, and they were back in the tournament with arguably a better team in 94. I would have been 9 years old at the time, and I couldn't find the TV broadcast for whatever reason. So I was listening to, I believe, the second round game between North Carolina and Boston College. And Boston College ended up winning that game and absolutely ripped my little heart out.
You broke my heart!
And that was the end of Rasheed Wallace and Jerry Stackhouse and my first kind of set of heroes.
Right. Ugh. Okay, let's move on to something happier. Our next fact comes to us from April 12th, 2003. We'll actually stick in the same year here. Fenway's Green Monster, the left field wall in the Major League's smallest ballpark, has a new look. In the place of a net that the team used to collect home run balls that cleared the wall, the fans now occupy the space, sitting 310 feet away and 40 feet above the field as they watch Red Sox right-hander Pedro Martinez give up 10 runs in 4 1/3 inning in a 13-6 loss to the Orioles.
That went south for Red Sox fans real quick.
Well, as this season is for them as well.
Sorry, Goldberg.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Goldberg, and sorry, Carrabas, if you're actually listening. I didn't realize it was that recent that those seats were put in.
I didn't either.
I mean, like 2003, I mean, we're still talking 20 years ago, but still.
Don't do that to me.
Okay.
You son of a bitch.
Okay, I was alive, too. Let's not act like, you know, I'm talking about something that was before I was
born.
You were
in middle school. You might not have been in middle school. Don't even say anything.
I was in fourth grade.
God damn it.
but I mean, that still feels like very recent. You know, for a change of something like that for a historic ballpark. And I don't know, maybe it's just because we're so used to it at this point, you know? But yeah, 20 years ago this week, fans began sitting atop the monster.
Huh.
All right, our third fact comes to us from April 14th, 1953. So we talked about last week, the Braves moving to Milwaukee, right? In 1953, the Braves make the grand move to Milwaukee out of Boston, where they had been since the start of the franchise. Well, now here we are, April 14th, 1953, in their first ever game played in Milwaukee, the transplanted Braves beat the Cardinals at County Stadium 3-2. Thanks to Billy Bruton's walk-off home run off Jerry Staley in the 10th inning. The 27-year-old rookie center fielder will not hit another home run this season.
Always a feel-good story when you have a Cardinals loss in there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And thus was the start of a St. Louis-Milwaukee rivalry.
God, I hate the Cardinals so much. I don't know if it traces back to that, but I hate them with every fiber of my being.
Oh, you mean the Cardinals that currently have the worst record in the National League?
Those Cardinals have a standard, sir.
They have a standard.
What a week it's been.
Yeah, it's been a really weird week in the Central.
All right, you got any more facts?
I do. I have one final fact to lay on you. Coming to us from April 16th, 1963. So 10 years after County Stadium officially opens, we're back to County Stadium for the County Stadium home opener for 1963. Eddie Matthews hits his 400th career home run off of Phillies right-hander Jack Hamilton, propelling the Braves to their fifth consecutive win after starting the season with two losses. The Milwaukee third baseman's two-run shot puts him seventh on the all-time home run list, behind only Babe Ruth, Jimmy Fox, Ted Williams, Mel Ott, Lou Gehrig, and Stan Musial.
And later, Eddie would have a great-great-grandson who would go on to co-host the Chatting Average podcast.
Ain't that something? But again, throwing it out there, just how underrated and how underappreciated Eddie Matthews was as a player. This dude was a baller, son.
The gold standard for third baseman.
The gold standard. All right, that has been This Week in Baseball History. Do with that useless knowledge what you will.
All right, guys, we will be right back to discuss a very eventful week for the Atlanta Braves and take a look at the week ahead. All right, guys. Well, Braves fans have had quite a season this week. And it started with a series in St. Louis. Coming off of a 2-1 series win in Washington, looking to continue the momentum through this St. Louis series. Had Charlie Morton on the mound for the first game of the series and pitched fairly well, Charlie Morton-esque. Six innings, allowing three earned runs, two walks, kept it manageable, and the Braves bats did what the Braves bats needed to do. We were lifted by an Austin Riley homer in the first inning and never gave up the lead after that. Ozzie Albies hit his first of the year in the second inning, and there was no looking back as the Braves would eventually win 8-4.
Yeah, really good game to open up the series against St. Louis, a good bounce-back win. After the game three loss to the Nationals. Speaking about that Austin Riley homer, what an absolute tank.
Monsters. 473.
Just a shot. And then
actually now holds the record for longest home run ever hit by a visiting player at Busch Stadium.
Right. Just an absolute blast. And talking about the Charlie Morton start, you know, he kept you in the game. You got just about six innings out of him, but it was a laborious start.
It was, and not the most encouraging from a guy that you're really expecting to get a lot of innings out of this year.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, the Braves moved to 3-1 with that first win against the Cardinals. Come back for the second game. We have Dylan Dodd making his major league debut on the mound, going up against Steven Matz for the Cardinals. Dylan was fantastic in his first outing. He went five full innings, allowing six hits, one earned run, no walks, and struck out three. I can't imagine what more you could possibly want to see out of a young starter making a spot start early in the season.
Yes, I unfortunately I missed most of his start. I was calling a game that night. But funny enough, the parent up in the booth with me that night that was running the scoreboard, he actually had the game up on his phone, sitting there watching it while I'm calling a game and while he's running the scoreboard of said game. And so we'd go to commercial break and I would lean over and I'd say, "How's Dodd doing?" And every time he would just kind of give me this silent nod of like, "He's doing all right.
Yep.
He's doing good. All right." Up, a two-run homer by the San Diego Padres. They now have a 4-1 lead in the top of the ninth over your New York Mets.
All right. If you're going to beat the Braves, the least you can do is beat the Mets as well. Yep. So this game was very much highlighted by Ronald Acuña. Went 2-for-5 on the day, had a couple of phenomenal outfield assists, getting O'Neill at home late in the game, and also one on Wilson Contreras at second base. Really good to see Ronald looking as healthy as he is. He's out there stealing bases. He got two in this game as well. He had the fielding, he's got the hitting, he's got everything you want to see out of the guy. And after a rough 2022 campaign, it's nice.
Yeah, absolutely it is. You know, it feels like he's, we talked about it a lot last year that it felt like in a way he was almost kind of having to hold back in a sense, or was maybe just not too sure how far he could push himself last year. And understandably so, coming off a traumatic injury like he was, you know, it's always going to be in the back of your mind, I suppose, especially that very first season back. But this year, man, it just feels like he has completely taken the leash off and he is just full on, you know, on both sides of the plate. It's tremendous to see.
And the power kept rolling in this game too. Yet again, Austin Riley homers in the first inning to put the Braves out in front and put them out in front for good, no less. Orlando Arcia, yet again, proving more than deserving of the starting shortstop role for this team. Also homered in the second, and Sean Murphy had his first RBI as a Brave in this game. So all around a good game, another win 4-1 for the Braves. Take the first two from the Cardinals and have the third game of the series coming back. So earlier when I made when I referenced the Cardinals having a standard, that was in reference to something their manager, Ollie Marmol, said about Tyler O'Neill on the game-deciding play where Ronald Acuna threw O'Neill out at home plate. Manager said something to the effect of that he thought that O'Neill was not hustling around the bases and we hold ourselves to a higher standard here. I really think Ronald just has an awesome arm. Like, O'Neill wasn't dogging it around the bases. I didn't see anything like that.
No. And, you know, too, we're talking about a guy that has had hamstring issues in the past and that the Cardinals have publicly told him, like, don't hurt yourself out there. But even still, he was giving good effort coming around third and heading home. I don't know.
I don't know, but it seems like the Cardinals took all of six games to find find something to stew about in their locker room, which I don't hate. I'd love to see them fall apart this early in the season.
Marmol just I don't know. He just seems like a crybaby. He really does. Like he just seems like a complainer. How many times in this series did the cameras cut to him in the dugout and he's just like barking at the umpire about something?
Yep. Well, I mean, you know, there is the option of going and bringing back Tony La Russa on the table.
You know what? The Cardinals deserve nothing more than to bring Tony La Russa back.
And you know what? Cardinals fans would eat it up. Like, that was going to be something good for their team.
Oh, absolutely they would.
All right, so we get to the Sunday game against the Cardinals, and Bryce Elder is making his first start of the season going up against Miles Michaelis. Elder really showed out in this one, went six innings, allowing only two hits. He did walk three batters, but he struck out six. All of this on 79 pitches. Really encouraging outing from Bryce Elder, who's looking like he's going to be locking down a roster spot sooner rather than later. Or a rotation spot, I should say.
Right. And you know, he had a couple of rough outings in spring training. And then, of course, he was one of the cuts of getting sent back down before the roster was finalized. But, man, and we'll talk about his second start, you know, coming up here in this segment as well. But just talk about a guy who has come back up and has been able to basically so far continue what he started last year. You know, he's a guy that's going to shove, and, you know, if he cut down on walks, he'd be doing a lot better. But man, you're talking about a guy that if you can get five good innings out of him every time to keep you within a game, that's perfect. That's all you're looking for.
I mean, the second I saw Bryce Elder when he first got called up and showed us that jawline of his, I knew we were in good hands.
Oh, for real, for sure.
It is one of the mightiest jawlines I have ever seen in all my life.
And now he's got the stubble coming back in. He's going to grow the beard back out.
Oh, you don't want a piece of that.
You just don't. You know why he shaved the beard, though? Why
is that?
Because his mama didn't like it.
Oh, come on, mama.
Mama!
Let the kids play. This game would also be known as the Matt Olson game. Matty Good Daddy Lord. Went 3 for 5 with a homer, 2 doubles, and 3 RBI, just absolutely having his way with the Cardinals pitching staff. At the end of the day, Michaelis went 6, allowing 9 hits and 5 earned runs, which was more than enough for the Braves as they take this one 5-2 in a sweep of the Cardinals, putting them at 5-1 going into their opening homestand.
A sweep is great. You can't do any better than that. And I think, you know, a lot of us, we talked about it last week after the opening series against the Nats. Win the series, take 2 out of 3. The fact that you're able to sweep a 3-game set against a team that, you know, odds on is still probably going to win the Central. That's great. Can't ask for anything more than that.
Got to feel good about it, and got to feel good about coming back home and seeing the home fans at Truist Park, especially with a team like the San Diego Padres coming in. As we all know, their lineup is just a murderer's row from top to bottom. And this is really going to be a series that I think we look back on as sort of a barometer for where these Braves are at early in the season. So the first game of the series featured Blake Snell and Spencer Strider. And Spencer goes 5 innings, allowing 3 earned runs, walking 3, striking out 9, as you would expect from Spencer Strider. Snell did not have quite so much luck. Austin Riley got the scoring started in the first inning with a sacrifice fly, followed by an Arcia homer in the third inning, putting the Braves up 2-0. It would be back and forth for the remainder of the game, but the Braves would pull away in the eighth, finally taking it 7-6.
Great opening game. And I think one that gave us real high expectations about how the rest of the series was going to go. This was the quintessential two powerhouses meeting kind of baseball game. And, you know, the Braves able to do just enough to pull out a win here.
Yeah, I mean, an encouraging start to the series. I mean, you've got a 4-game set with this powerhouse team. You took the first one. You have to feel really good going into the rest of the series. So the second game comes around, and we've got Jared Schuster taking the hill for the Braves, making his second major league start, going up against Nick Martinez for the Padres. Schuster goes 4 innings, allowing 6 hits, 4 earned runs, 4 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Not a great outing for Schuster. He gets knocked out early as the Padres take a 4-3 lead in the fifth. Tonkin comes in to relieve him, but allows another run. Unfortunately, the Braves would not be able to put it together late, as the Padres win 5-4.
Well, you know, as unfortunate or as rough as the start by Schuster was, I think the takeaway from this game, at least for me, was the offense and the fact that twice in this game you had the bases loaded and you come away empty. You know, and I think if looking at it, especially Eddie Rosario is about 3 or 4 feet away from a grand slam in this game.
Yep.
Right. And so, you know, it's so funny how one base hit on a Friday night, how it changes, really it changes the dynamic of this series and how it's going to be looked at based on what comes the next two games. But in that's just how baseball is, you know, it's such a fickle little game.
Yep. So, I mean, you still feel good about this series. The Braves won the first game by 1 run. They lost the second game by 1 run, you know, no harm, no foul so far. So you get to the third game of the series and you're hopeful with Charlie Morton on the mound going up against Michael Wacha. Unfortunately, the Braves made Michael Wacha look like Cy Young in this game. Wacha went 6 innings, allowing 2 hits, only walked 1, and struck out 10. Charlie Morton, on the other hand, goes 5 innings, allowing 6 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned, 3 walks and 6 strikeouts. And for those who may have been unaware, Juan Soto is Charlie Morton's daddy. There are just no two ways about that. It is to the point where if Charlie Morton's on the hill and Juan Soto's at the plate, I want an intentional walk.
Hey, Soto's like, what, 6-for-7 now or something ridiculous?
6-for-7 with like 5 or 6 walks, 3 home runs, something crazy.
Yeah, it hurts.
It's like out of, I don't know, 14 plate appearances, maybe one good result.
Well, and, you know, and going back to, you know, how well we made Michael Wacha look, our offense just felt so flat Saturday night.
I mean, we scraped a run across the plate in the 8th inning when Matt Olson scored Hilliard, but that was it. That was the entire game worth of offense.
And at times, it felt like we were swinging a wet newspaper out there. I don't know. It was a very flat, lifeless showing.
It was, and it felt like last April.
Yeah, yeah. It all of a sudden it felt like a slog.
Yep. Well, ultimately, you've got a chance to split the series against the Padres with the 4th game Sunday Night Baseball at home. Crowd's full. Dylan Dodd's back on the mound. He had a great outing his first time out. Seth Lugo's on the hill for the Padres. The Braves have owned Seth Lugo for years. Everything's adding up to a Braves win, and so the Padres win 10-2. Seth Lugo goes 6 innings, allowing only 5 hits, walked 4 but struck out 5. Dylan Dodd goes 4 1/3, allowing 10 hits, 7 earned runs, only strikes out 2 and gives up 2 big flies. Tough outing for the youngster.
Well, and it was one of those situations, I think, where by like the 2nd inning, really, you knew this was going south. But you also knew that Dylan was just going to have to wear this one.
Yeah. I mean, the bullpen had been taxed. I hadn't gotten a day off yet this season, so you knew whoever was starting late in this series was just gonna have to deal with it. And you know, good for the bullpen for what they've done. I wanted to take a second and point out that Jesse Chavez, he's in 5 1/3 innings pitched. He has struck out 5 and allowed 2 hits. No earned runs, no walks. This guy is 39 years old, 6'1", 175. He is quite possibly the least intimidating presence on a baseball field. And he just gets it done. It's amazing.
Yeah, he rules. I love Jesse Chavez. Always have, always will.
We need a Jesse Chavez shirt.
Ooh. Let me hop in the lab this week on that. Stay tuned, friends.
Thinking Mad Hatter themed.
Jeez. I'll come up with something good.
All right. Well, we did not like that Padres series. Leaves the Braves at 6-4 going into a series with the Cincinnati Reds.
And it leaves the Braves without Michael Harris and Travis d'Arnaud.
And it leaves the Braves without Michael Harris and Travis d'Arnaud. Travis d'Arnaud got trucked by Trent Grisham at home plate. Absolutely demolished.
No, I thought it was Odor.
It was Odor. What does it matter? I only really care about Travis here.
Rude.
but yeah, he got his clock cleaned like I haven't seen in quite a while. So he's on the concussion IL, and that is his 4th concussion.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we're to the point where we're starting to get worried.
Yeah, we're worried.
The great thing though is we have Sean Murphy. Mm-hmm. Sean Murphy is perfectly capable of playing every day, and we have Chadwick Trump as a backup who's a really good backup, lest we forget. So,
and he's going to make Atlanta great again.
God damn it, Kim. But yeah, so while it's a bummer that Travis is on the IL, while it's a bummer that Michael Harris is on the IL, this is why we went out and got this gigantic fleet of outfielders. This is why we went out and got a great outfielder, a great catcher, even though we already had a couple of catchers. This is the time. I didn't think it would come so quickly, but this is the time where the Braves' depth is going to save them.
It is. And, you know, not that you ever want to see injuries happen at all, but I feel like if, you know, injuries like this stacking up on top of each other are going to happen, probably not the worst thing that is happening in April.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get it out of our system.
And none of them appear to be long-term either.
Exactly. That's the most encouraging thing. We haven't lost anybody to a major surgery or anything like that. All right. So for the first game of the Reds series, we had Graham Ashcraft, the young pitcher for the Reds, taking the mound up against Bryce Elder. Bryce gave us another excellent start. He went 6 1/3, allowing 6 hits, only walking 1 and striking out 7. No earned runs yet again for Bryce Elder. Graham Ashcraft also had an excellent outing. His final line shows 3 walks and 2 earned runs, but the Braves were having fits against this guy early and didn't end up scoring on him until the eighth inning. Or sorry, the seventh inning.
I was thoroughly impressed by this kid.
The Reds pitching is for real, and I touched on it in I'm so glad now that I mentioned Graham Ashcraft's name in the season preview show, because he went out right away and showed people what I was talking about.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in a way, I know the Reds had a 100 loss season last year, but at least it feels like they have a destination, right? Like they have a sense of direction,
right? They have a what I believe in 2 or 3 years will be a bona fide big three, of three aces with Ashcraft, Lodolo, and Green. They're just going to be incredible as long as they stay healthy.
Oh God, Hunter Green is so good.
He's so good. Give me all of the Hunter Green versus Spencer Strider games, please.
Oh boy,
give me all those 75 minute baseball games. All right, so the Braves take the first game of the Red Series 5-4, and we are in the midst of the following game as we speak, so we will be talking to you about that when we meet next. One thing I did want to talk about before we sign off, Cam, the National League a couple of seasons ago got a new position. What position was that?
Was the designated hitter.
The designated hitter. And what is the job of one who is designated to hit?
Hit baseball.
It's okay. See baseball, hit baseball. Okay. Easy enough. All right. So explain to me why our primary designated hitter is batting 071 after like 40 some odd plate appearances.
I don't know. Maybe he's due. I don't know.
this is the one thing I'm stuck on with this Braves team. I am all in on the methodology, on how they're doing everything, on how they're building their roster. You cannot explain to me why a team this good has a player this bad occupying a spot in the lineup 4 or 5 games a week. It's crazy to me.
Well, I'll say this too. With Sam Hilliard breaking out the way he is here as of late, you can't help but feel like inevitably when Michael Harris returns to the roster and takes back center field, Hilliard's got a good shot to be slotted in left field.
Yeah, and honestly, at this point, I'd rather see Eli White get the ABs than Marcelo Ozuna, because at least Eli White showed us in Gwinnett and in spring training that he's got some pop in that bat.
Now I kind of want Eli White to have like a broken bat single or something like that, just so I can tweet Mr. White is breaking bats.
I'm hoping for that for you, Cam.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And hopefully we'll be able to talk about that the next time we meet, because that's going to do it for this episode of the Chatting Average Podcast. As always, you can hear us right here on the Fans First Sports Network, and we will be back next week with another brand new episode. So for Cam Matthews, my name's Alex. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
This has been the Chatting Average Podcast. Be sure to check out our merchandise store at teespring.com/stores/Chatting Average Podcast. And please consider becoming a patron of our show at patreon.com/Chatting Average. We'll see you next week for another brand new episode.